This is a topic that the three of us have been preparing for pretty extensively this past week, and for most of us, or all of us in here, probably preparing to listen to it all of your lives. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to talk about is expansion of the mind, and we're going to talk about knowing and not knowing, and we're going to have a good time. My thinking this week got kicked off by one of the quotes that was in the brochure that Connie put together, and it talks about the practice of identifying ourselves with a larger life, he goes on to talk about the illumination of cosmic consciousness. The intellect identifies itself with the spirit until it makes possible a greater influx of the spirit to the intellect. I used to do a lot of teaching of Reiki, and my favorite part of the class was at the end when we would all gather around the massage table and take turns getting treatments. And as the teacher, I felt that one of the best gifts I could ever give my students was to give them a greater understanding of how they knew things, how they knew where to put their hands when they were working on a patient. And for each student, that would be different. And I had the best time, you know, when they started out as first-degree Reiki practitioners, watching them get their first bit of awareness. And some of them got their training all the way through the master level with me, and I got to watch them really develop that awareness of their knowing and their being able to contribute substantially to other people's lives by practicing that knowing. Now, Holmes says that in the Beverly Hills Lectures, which is one of my favorite books, that under certain conditions, anyone can remember anything that happened to anyone who ever lived. The field of memory is a universal medium which is timeless, unobstructed, and present everywhere. Nothing ever really blocks it. We're all psychic from the standpoint of principle. One person is not more psychic than another, but for some reason it comes to the surface in some more than others. And I know that a lot of people think of psychic as kind of a woo-woo. To me, it's a gift that we all have. It's the ability to know God through senses other than our mind. And we gather knowing in that way. So when I look at the ways of knowing that we have, there's like four major categories. The one that's probably the most well-known among and the most spectacular is the clairvoyant, which means clear seeing. This could manifest in visions or perhaps in being able to see auras. For a long time, we had a friend at the Celebration Center of Religious Science who was a phenomenal clairvoyant. And he was famous for seeing auras, and he had this gentle way of teaching people about who they were by using the auras. He used to do readings for people that maybe wanted to know a little bit more about what was going on in their life. And he was probably the most powerful clairvoyant I've ever known. That was Robert McEwen. The next is the psychic hearing or clairaudience. And you find this among people who hear this voice. And a lot of times they discount it, you know. And I know that if you talk to some therapists, they may think that you've got a little problem if you're talking about voices that you're hearing, but they are valid. You are indeed hearing something. And through training, you can begin to get a good feeling for when you need to act on it, or, you know, perhaps it's not something you want to act on, but it's all valid, the information that you get. The next is the psychic feeling. These are the people that get gut feelings. It may be a simple thing like prickling on the hair of the back of your neck or something like that, or just this feeling in your body when you walk into a room and you can sense perhaps there was anger there or some kind of intense feeling. Those are the psychic feelers. And last is the knowers. And those are the clairsentients. Those are the people that just know something. And I'm a clairsentient myself. I know things and I don't know how I get them. But I do know one thing that Holmes says, and again in the Beverly Hills lectures, he talks about the lowest form of evolution will be that which has no conscious awareness whatever. There is mind that sleeps in the mineral, waves in the vegetable, and wakes to simple consciousness in the animal, to self-consciousness in man, and to cosmic consciousness in an ever-ascending hierarchy of evolved beings. That is what the Bible means when it says we're surrounded by powers and witnesses. And this information is available to all of us through one or more of our senses. It comes in all the time. The information is constantly available. And we're acting on it whether we know it or not. What we get through training is an awareness of what those gifts are and how to use them. And maybe one of the things we could talk about a little later on in our breakout groups is just maybe our ability to know and what that may look like for each of us. So, Phil?
I have read a few of Ernest Holmes' books. I haven't read them all. But one of the first ones I read was This Thing Called You. And as many other things that I've read by him, it was a life-changing event. He describes in that book our everyday circumstances and attitudes as typically being half in heaven and half on a very dense earth. And he spends the rest of the book talking about the tools that are available to us to cull the forests, level the mountains, bridge the streams, and make the deserts bloom. And so those tools, it relates right back to the kind of thing, are tools that exist already in our minds. And it's learning to tap those things, to look in, and to listen. Now, the reason I use that little book to start with is because it relates to something else that, although now I'm going to describe a magazine article that I read to you, just briefly describe it. Now, when I tell you what the title of the magazine is, just promise not to doze off at just hearing the title, because that might be your first temptation. But is Ernest Holmes was not a physicist. But he titled his book, This Thing Called You. Now, believe it or not, physicists in quantum physics now are using terms like thing. You know, and then they come up with names that just seem so abstract as to be, well, those are things. They're just things everywhere. And there are things that you can see. There are things that you can't see. But they're all still things. And so this article is called Nature's Psychogenic Forces Localized Quantum Consciousness. just the sound of it says, well, I think I'll have another soda or something. But, in quantum physics, they talk about the local universe and the non-local universe. And they talk about cause and effects in ways that would say, well, I think Ernest Holmes said that. But everything is cause and effect. It's just that a cause here, you know, might produce an effect over here, you know. And what this article describes is, I'm just going to try to just to read a little bit here, but consciousness and change, and it goes on with a string of adjectives, fluctuation, oscillation, flow, movement, etc., are then an identity. That is, they're things. The calculus and so on in this quantum idealism is of and by conscious beings rather than blind mechanisms. When consciousness is thus understood, our being is a more ordered form of matter ensouled by psychogenic forces explained by more refined systems of physics. So what he's doing, you know, we run into problems when we start talking about psychic ability. They're semantical issues.
Right.
We know by demonstration that these things happen and they work. And so, but that's not real acceptable in the scientific world to say, well, so it is, you know. And it is. And that works. And, you know, it doesn't really matter whether or not your words necessarily agree. The demonstration is self-evident. And then that's the kind of thing Joel Goldsmith would say, you know. If you know God, you have substance. But, you know, it's a matter of breaking it down into little pieces so that we can get our arms around this thing. We say, you know, we're one with God, but that's a huge concept. And that's why we take these individual things and we explore them through these psychic means, that we're using the tools that Ernest Holm describes in this thing called you. And so these tools of the psychic, I think, are just real valuable. I may have some more things to say before this is over, but
I've got a lot of notes.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm going to tell you a personal story, my story. So Judy said we've been talking now for a couple of days because I've had a problem of why my brain gets full. And it usually gets full up here and then it spreads. And it's like so much information is getting in till it's going to burst. And I don't quite know what's happening. Okay. So yesterday morning, out of bed, into my living room, sitting in my chair, about to read The Essential Ernest Holmes, when I read this sentence and I said, got to call Judy. So I wrote Judy an email. I'll read you the email that I wrote to Judy. Judy, I'm reading The Essential Ernest Holmes, and there it is, this passage, mind, the thing, spirit, causation, is beyond and yet not beyond our grasp. Beyond in that it's so big, within in that wherever we grasp at it, we are it to the extent that we grasp it. But since it is infinite, we can never encompass it. So, Judy, maybe the fullness that I sometimes feel in the front of my head and then circles my head is my trying to reach for something, reach for an answer. Reach for an answer. I didn't even know what the question is. But when I think I have that something that I am looking for, that I have grasped it, it jumps ahead. So I feel as if I'm always running after, always running after, always running after, and indeed so I am. I will always be running after, reaching and expanding. So when I feel the fullness in my head, my inner being spoke to me this morning, telling me to relax and let go. As I'm sitting in my living room, looking at my accent red wall in the dining room, I see and feel the beauty and the peace and the calm that I have created. I see stuff, pictures, the dining table, flowers, and I'm also looking at space, the nothingness. My first thought is, where is it? The mind, the thing, spirit, causation. It's that space between me and you. It's that space that's out there. As I'm sitting here typing this, smiling, I'm remembering my middle school geometry class. In white chalk, the teacher had drawn, before class began, three intersecting triangles. To do what, I can't remember. What I do remember is that as hard as I looked, and I looked hard, I could not see the triangles intersect. The next class session, we had a substitute teacher who, with three different colors of chalk, drew the triangles intersecting. So I'm looking in this space, this nothingness, looking for the different colors to intersect so I can see the picture. My inner being speaks again. The colors are intersecting all around me. The red of the wall, the colors of the pictures, the wall, etc., etc. The space, nothingness. The space to imagine, to create. There is so much space, so much space. My mind is that space. These are the ramblings at 11:26 a.m. I still have not organized my thoughts for tomorrow. This and our dialogue has been fun.
I don't know if we want to go much further than this, but I do want to say that one of the things that I have been getting out of this dialogue with my two co-panelists is a tremendous feeling of expansion. I walked in the room kind of, you know, focused and on the material plane, and all of a sudden I'm feeling that the mind is so much more than the thing that's in my skull. It's just, it's almost as though it's unfathomable.
Yeah.
And Phil was talking to me a little earlier about the mind containing opposites, which is probably the best place to go next and to kind of leave you all in our expansion of the mind. You want to talk about opposites?
Actually, what I was telling her about was some readings in the Gnostic literature, and one of the writers in a book called Foreigner, this is one of those discovered a number of years ago, he's trying to describe the indescribable, the one, and he has sentences like, he's not infinite. And so immediately your mind says, whoa. And then the very next sentence, yet infinite. And so it goes on down the line, several pages of opposites, which to say that he's everything. As the thing called you is. And I your music just tied into it, man. I had to write it down. You know, the secret to tapping into this stuff is opening up your heart.
Yeah.